from deep inside your radio.
So the big news, as this program airs, is that the machines are not working. The big news is that Osama bin Laden has delivered another audio tape. Well, he didn't deliver it. I'm sure he has his people. Gosh, I would hope so. His people have delivered another audio tape featuring the stylings, the rhetorical stylings of Osama bin Laden to Al Jazeera. And it's all over the news. And my favorite reaction is from Pete Hoekstra, real name, who is the chairman, the Republican chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. I know. Too many oxymorons there, even to shoot in the barrel. Pete Hoekstra goes on and says, you know, this guy, Osama bin Laden, he is the master. These people, Al-Qaeda, they're the master of using modern technology. They use the internet. They use these messages. Pete, radio to Pete, what was delivered to Al Jazeera was an audio tape. You understand what that means? A cassette, Pete. A cassette. Now, in this modern, well-appointed communications center here at the Le Show Dome, if somebody walked in with an audio cassette, ladies and gentlemen, there's not a machine in this facility anymore to play it. I'm just looking around. There's one way down there, and it's not connected. So maybe we could play it. So this is why, really, we should be hating Al Jazeera, because they still have cassette machines. But, you know, wake me when Osama's messages start being delivered on CD, okay? Hello, welcome to the show. Little portable hard drives, then I'll be scared. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, where we almost don't have a cassette machine. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the Le Show program. This probably is why we don't get the Osama tapes first, because they must know that the cassette machines here are maintained even better than the CDs. Ladies and gentlemen, the generals had their chance. The retired generals. Now come the retired CIA guys. A CIA official at a top role during the run-up to the Iraqi war now charges the White House with ignoring intelligence that said there were no WMDs or an active nuclear program in Iraq. The former highest-ranking CIA officer in Europe, Tyler Drumheiler. Come on. Somebody in the Writers Guild made up that name. Hans Tyler Drumheiler. That is good. That's good work, boys. Take a lunch early. Also says that while the intelligence community did give the White House some bad intelligence, it also gave the White House good intelligence, which the administration chose to ignore. Was it, 2 years ago I told you that the war to watch was the war between the Bush White House and the CIA? Drumheiler is on 60 Minutes with these charges. He retired last year. He says the White House ignored crucial information from a high and credible source. That was Iraq's foreign minister, Naji Sabri, whom the U.S. had turned into a source. Interesting. When CIA Director George Tenet delivered this news to the president, the vice president, and other high-ranking officials, they were excited until they learned what the news was. Quote, the source told us, that is to say the Iraqi foreign minister who was working for us, that there were no active weapons of mass destruction programs. The White House group that was dealing with preparation for the Iraq war came back and said they were no longer interested. And we said, well, what about the intel? And they said, quote, well, this isn't about intel anymore. This is about regime change. The policy was set. The war in Iraq was coming. They were looking for intelligence to fit into the policy. Unquote. Sounding very similar to the Downing Street memo of last summer, where a British source, after meeting in Washington, said they were fixing the intelligence to suit the policy. Seems to be a pattern. Seems to be a theme. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice has stated that Naji Sabri was just one source and therefore not reliable. Unlike, what, Curveball? Check him out. Google Curveball, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't remember. Drumheiler says, it just sticks in my craw every time I hear them say it's an intelligence failure. This was a policy failure. I think over time people will look back on this and see this is going to be one of the great policy mistakes of all time. Hey, at least we're in the record books. That's what counts, ladies and gentlemen, as you well know. What is it people say when they you know, stand in line to go by Graceland? I want to be part of history. Well, we made it. Dateline Baghdad, U.S. officials were warned for more than 2 years that Shiite Muslim militias were infiltrating Iraq's security forces and taking control of neighborhoods, but they failed to take action to counteract it. This is according to Iraqi and American officials, being quoted by Knight Ridder News Service. Now American officials call the militias the primary security concern in Iraq. U.S. officials concede they didn't act, in part because they were focused on fighting the Sunni-dominated insurgency and on recruiting and training Iraqi security forces. Last year, as we worked through the problem set, militias wasn't the problem set we focused on, says Major General Rick Lynch, the top American military spokesman. We should learn some new language. Problem set. I got a problem set for you right here, Major Lynch. U.S. diplomats in Baghdad were slow to recognize that the majority Shiite population's ascent to political power would expand rather than diminish militia activity. Many believed the group's members would retire. Yeah, well, you know, enough of that militia work. What was it the guy said? If you've got a lazy boy and your AC works, why would you throw a bomb? You can take the military out of America, but you cannot take the America out of the military. Apparently. Ladies and gentlemen, though, let's move on from Iraq to Iran. Now, you know that we're being whipped up for concern about this Iranian nuclear program. There's going to be some bad intel there. And while we're getting all whipped up, here is something I don't think has been on the air anywhere else in this country. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't listen to everything yet. I have a machine, though, that's working on it. You remember who David Kaye was? He was a pretty much a hardliner. Weapons inspector. Used to go on MSNBC all the time and say, after he left the weapons inspection work, say, we're going to find those WMDs. I'm sure of it. Which is why George Bush hired David Kaye to be the first head of the Iraq Survey Group to go over there and find the weapons of mass destruction after the war. He reported finding nothing. Bush administration replaced him with Charles Dilfer, who reported finding nothing. All right, so that's David Kaye. He's on the phone with the BBC this week talking about the Iranian nuclear program that we're supposed to be real scared of right now.
People don't note that the Iranians have taken longer and achieved less than any other country that attempted clandestinely to produce nuclear weapons. So I think it's wrong to paint the situation in Iran as Iran's on the brink of becoming a nuclear power. Iran is on the brink of learning a lot of important lessons about nuclear weapons, but their program has not moved ahead with the determination and speed that should give one a state of panic right now.
Okay, let us know when we should be panicked, though, all right? Deal? Because timing with panic, as with other things, is important. For example, ladies and gentlemen, the Army Corps of Engineers has private contractors fanned out throughout southeast Louisiana this week, inspecting every inch of the region's shaken hurricane protection system. This week, 10 months since Katrina, they have inspectors fanning out to look at the levee system this week. Timing. This $1.1 million exercise is to detect any problems that may be lurking in the 181 miles of levees and flood walls that weren't destroyed or visibly damaged. Forensic engineers with the Corps and independent investigative teams have repeatedly inspected the miles, 169, that were damaged by Katrina and Rita. This is the first detailed system-wide assessment. In late April, hurricane season begins a little over a month from now. Quote, although our guys have been out there looking since shortly after Katrina, this is a reassessment of everything and to some degree an inventory of the entire system, Corps spokesman Rob Brown says. This is the fine-tooth comb approach that will tell us everything and document it. The work is to be finished no later than June 1st, the opening of hurricane season. Timing. Timing, babe. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Harry, I had no idea you were there.
I'm right here. I'm so right here. Sorry. Sorry about that, Dick. I didn't mean to surprise you. But now, ladies and gentlemen, now that we're out of the way of the surprises, it's time for news from outside the bubble. At least he wasn't sleeping, as he supposedly was during the meeting with Chinese President Hu. A senior British officer has criticized, quote, shoulder holster American generals for trying to emulate film stars. Brigadier General Alan Sharp, who worked alongside Americans at Baghdad, says there was a strong streak of Hollywood with officers trying to portray themselves as Sylvester Stallone or John Wayne. Those Stallone wannabes, they'll get you every time. He wrote the comments in a paper on Britain's influence on U.S. foreign relations, and the essay is likely to strain the special relationship further, coming after other British officers' criticism of the American approach. An important part of being a successful American officer, he writes, is to be able to combine the real enacted heroics of Audie Murphy, the newsreel antics of General Douglas MacArthur, the movie performances of Hollywood actors, the Brigadier wrote. While this might look good on television at home, the Brigadier suggested that, quote, loud voices, full body armor, wraparound sunglasses, airstrikes, and daily broadcasts from shoulder holster wearing Brigadier generals proudly announcing how many Iraqis have been killed by U.S. forces today was no hearts and minds winning tool, unquote. He referred to the early U.S. regime in Iraq as autocratic and an interim dictatorship. By contrast, he describes British servicemen, although under-equipped, as undemonstrative, phlegmatic, and pragmatic. They patrolled on foot where possible and were keen to interact with locals. He argued the British Army's 500 years of experience in colonialism gave it a marked edge over the Americans in counterinsurgency operations. He recommends Britain should stand in the corner with a bucket and towel advising the undisputed heavyweight champion about who and who to, how to fight. More, sure, from a similar spot on the globe, from the Glasgow Sunday Herald, British Foreign Office lawyers have formally advised Jack Straw, Foreign Secretary, that it would be illegal under international law for Britain to support any U.S.-led military action against Iran. Did they give similar advice about Iraq? There are indications they did. The advice given to the Foreign Secretary in the last few weeks is thought to have prompted his open criticism last week of Tony Blair's backing for President Bush. Straw called any thought of a military attack on Iran nuts. I think that's British for nuts. Yes, in the run-up to the Iraq invasion, Straw received similar private advice from senior Foreign Office lawyers. The Foreign Office's deputy legal advisor later resigned when the Attorney General reversed his initial view that the war was illegal. Sources within the Foreign Office say there is an express desire that this time their legal advice be heard and acted upon. There is now, says the paper, a clear paper trail of legal advice. The Foreign Office's lawyers have gone further than merely advising on the legality of military assistance. Their advice stretches to the use of British military advisors, UK airspace, and even the dangers of Tony Blair expressing support, which could be taken as legitimizing a U.S.-led attack without the express written consent of the national, without the express authority of the United Nations. More from outside the bubble? Yes. Hardening its opposition to sanctions against Iran, Russia says now the UN Security Council should only consider such measures if it has proof that Iran was trying to build nuclear weapons. That's Russia, ladies and gentlemen. And the United States emitted more greenhouse gases in 2004 than at any time in history, confirming its status as the world's largest polluter. Latest figures on the U.S. contribution to global warming, if there is such, we know there is, do we? Show that its carbon emissions have risen sharply despite international concerns over climate change. Maybe you didn't hear about this because the figures were quietly released on Easter Monday. And a lot of people still weren't at work in the biz. Net greenhouse gas emissions during 2004 increased by more than 1.5%, equivalent to a rise of 100 million tons of carbon dioxide. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. How's the war on terror going? Despite more than 4 years of legislation, executive orders, and presidential directives, the Bush administration has yet to comprehensively improve sharing of counterterrorism information among federal agencies and between them and thousands of non-federal partners. According to whom? According to government investigators. Repeated deadlines set by both President Bush and Congress have not been met, according to a report issued Monday by the Government Accountability Office. Why don't we let them run the government? They seem to know what's wrong. While acknowledging the complexity of the task, the report notes the responsibility for the effort has shifted since 2001 from the White House to the Office of Management and Budget to the Department of Homeland Security and now the Director of National Intelligence. None has yet completed the task, the report said. But they pushed it along. They succeeded in that. The GAO expressed disappointment that the Director of National Intelligence, John Negroponte, declined to address its findings beyond a letter saying that, quote, the review of intelligence activities is beyond your purview, speaking of the GAO. Homeland Security Chairman Susan Collins, Republican, requested the investigation, issued a statement regretting Negroponte's response. She co-sponsored the law that mandated the information sharing and created his job. And the number of terrorist attacks documented by U.S. intelligence agencies, hey, it's a war on terror, so those should be going down, shouldn't they? They increased sharply in 2005, crossing the 10,000 mark for the first time, according to documents obtained by Knight Ridder newspapers. Officials cautioned that much of the increase stems from a change last year in how terror attacks are counted. That's right. It all depends on what your definition of the word terror is.
So unexpectedly.
This is LeShow, and now, ladies and gentlemen, time for the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
Some good ones this week, I think, but you'll be the judge, won't you? And the jury. Britain's best-selling newspaper apologized this week to Desperate Housewives star Terry Hatcher for a story that claimed she had sex with men in a van outside her home. It seemed so credible at the time. The Sun tabloid acknowledged the article, which it ran last August, was, quote, totally incorrect. Well, see, you get credits for totality. And apologized to Hatcher for the embarrassment caused, as well as for the rental of the van. No! A Dateline Bellevue, Washington, a community college math instructor has apologized for a test question invoking Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice that students complained was racially insensitive. Peter Raichner, who taught at Bellevue Community College for more than 25 years, told a trustees meeting that the question on an exam last month was a, quote, egregious mistake, unquote. It began, quote, Condoleezza holds a watermelon just over the edge of the roof of the 300-foot federal building and tosses it up with a velocity of 20 feet per second, unquote. The question then asked students to determine when the watermelon would hit the ground. The Board of Trustees condemned the wording as insulting to Rice, who is black, because of caricatures of blacks eating watermelon. Raichner said the question originally referred to Gallagher, comedian who smashed watermelons as part of his act, and that he changed it to Condoleezza because she was more recognizable. Ooh, that's a slam at Gallagher. And because he likes the name Condoleezza. Said the president of the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle, quote, apologies have been made, but where's the atonement? Unquote. And Gallagher wants to know, where are the bookings? Dateline Dublin, ice cream makers Ben & Jerry's have apologized for causing offense by calling a new flavor Black and Tan, the nickname of a notoriously violent British militia that operated during Ireland's War of Independence. The ice cream is available only in the United States, is based on an ale and stout drink of the same name. Any reference on our part to the British Army unit was absolutely unintentional, and no ill will was ever intended, said a Ben & Jerry's spokesman. Ben & Jerry's was built on the philosophies of peace and love, he added. Watch for our new flavor, Luftwaffe. Deadline Seoul. Wednesday this week was a day of public apologies and acts of contrition. A Dallas-based investment firm, Lone Star, apologized in response to accusations of embezzlement and other controversies that surround its multi-billion-dollar investments in South Korea. That apology and donation came hours after a similar gesture from the Hyundai Kia Automotive Group, Hyundai apologized for an escalating corruption scandal, and it said as an act of contrition, the family that runs the conglomerate would donate about $1 billion for social welfare programs. Dateline Indianapolis, a voting machine company offered an apology to the state of Indiana this week. The state held a briefing on whether it should take action against election systems and software of Omaha. The apology came after a series of glitches with election systems voting software just 2 weeks away from the upcoming May primary. Some 27 counties in Indiana have paid millions of dollars to ESNS to buy election equipment and service contracts. Clerks from three counties reported the company was not meeting its contractual requirements. A Scottish chief constable has apologized after making a joke about young suicide bombers while addressing senior lawyers at a gala dinner. John Vine of Tayside Police made the gaffe during unscripted remarks. See, it's not just Mayor Nagin. At a bar association dinner, about 250 guests attended. Mr. Vine told a joke about Al-Qaeda fathers comparing notes about their suicide bomber sons. It reported that many in the audience were stunned when he delivered the punchline, quote, "Kids blow up so quickly these days," unquote. In a statement, Mr. Vine, police chief, said, "I accept that the joke was in poor taste, and I apologize profusely for any offense caused." Kids blow up so quickly these days. Deadline Nashua, New Hampshire, threatened by censure from fellow alderman Fred Teboom, apologized for addressing a German-born resident, quote, "Heil, Ludwig," and suggesting that he return to, quote, "Das Fatherland," unquote. He said, "There are no ethnic and racial slurs. Show me the ethnic slur in my comment. I recognize having used that language, I offended many citizens. To that extent, I apologize. An apology is an apology." Prior to this interview, Teboom offered a written statement to reporters in which his apology was the final sentence of an 8-paragraph statement. In the statement, he repeated that his remarks were not a slur. Teboom continued by saying that having lost most of his family during the Holocaust, he's left with no great love for Germans in general. The controversy originated in an email Teboom sent to a gentleman named Ludwig Heil, who had expressed in an email a question about whether his move, Ludwig Heil's move from Pittsburgh to Nashua, New Hampshire, was a good idea given the proposed cuts in the school department's operating budget. The response was, "Heil, Ludwig." Deadline Tallahassee, Florida, State Senator Gary Siplin was arrested last week on charges of using employees on the state payroll in his Senate reelection campaign. He told reporters that he apologized for running out the back door of his office and leaping over a fence when Orlando media sought comment from him. Apologized for running out the back door and leaping over a fence. He says he should have given them a no comment. A Paducah, Kentucky lawyer who's running for a local judgeship apologized after he joked in open court last week that his new campaign jingle would be, quote, "Kill a cop, shoot a cop, vote for Will Coutts," unquote. "It was a stupid thing to say. I very much regret having said it," Couch said in an interview. "If you make a mistake, you come up to the plate and you admit it, which is exactly what I'm doing right now." The plate. That's where you come, ladies and gentlemen. And in a surprise outburst that cast a diplomatic shadow, a screaming protester confronted President Bush and Chinese President Hu Jintao, interrupting the welcoming ceremony in the White House lawn. Bush later apologized to the Chinese leader. Apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. That was a gaffe-plagued meeting. These are the grown-ups in charge. Can't even run a state luncheon without having to apologize. They also introduced President Hu Jintao as president of the Republic of China. That's the official name of Taiwan, which China regards as a breakaway province. Here's an insight into President Hu from the Washington Post. In April 2003, shortly after he ascended to the top post, Bush ended a phone conversation by telling him he was a strong leader doing a good job. It was a standard Bush line we've come to recognize. from the Michael Brown and Donald Rumsfeld context, but White House officials were later told by Chinese officials that Bush's comment made a deep impression on who had never heard such praise from a world leader, who decided, according to White House officials, that Bush really wants him to succeed. President Bush later flew out to California. You know, he's in California right now. He's a four-day visit, had a meeting with Governor Schwarzenegger, who was very concerned about the federal levees up north. Well, they'll come around to inspecting them. Timing. But meanwhile, one wonders what else the governor and the president might have discussed.
So, Mr. President, welcome to California.
Hey, listen, Governor. As hot as it's getting in Washington, D.C., it's good to be anywhere else, but especially here because it's California.
So, how was your lunch with the Chinese president?
Who?
President who?
That's his name.
Whose?
That's right. Well, sir, you know, it was tense.
Mm-hmm.
It was full of tension.
Hmm. Who was tense?
Yes, he was.
Who was?
Who?
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 All right, sir. You know Senator Ackerman?
I do.
Nice to see you, sir.
So, sir, I'm sure you discussed human rights with who?
We had a frank exchange of views with who?
Who came up during the discussion?
Who was having the discussion? He didn't have to come up.
No, sir. Whose names were brought up during the discussion of human rights? It is important to my base as well as to my first coat of political primer.
Oh, sure. Well, we talked to Mr. Hu about the Falun Gong and the Tibetanese.
Mm. And who said what?
No, he said when.
Who did?
Yes, sir.
He said what?
He said when. Wen Ho Lee. That was his answer on the subject of human rights, how we had persecuted him.
Who?
Not who. When.
You persecuted when?
According to who.
And what did you say?
To who?
To whoever you were talking to.
I was talking to you.
Mr. President, I don't care if you were talking to you know who. What did he say?
When.
I thought he brought up when.
Who did?
That's what you said. Maria, let's use the small hammer for this trip. It photographs better in the lack of darkness.
Lovely woman. So, look, Governor Schwartz. Governor Schwartz and... So, look, Governor Ager, when he started talking about when, I just responderated to him about how this is the land of opportunity for racially ethnicated folks like Michelle Wee.
And what did he say?
When?
When you mentioned Wee.
He just brought it back around to when.
Who did?
Who do you think I'm talking about?
That's right.
Who?
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 Who? So he kept bringing up when?
Who did?
That's right. And your response?
I'd say we.
So, who left Washington how?
He left with Vice Premier Wu.
Who did?
Who left with Wu?
That's what you said. That's what you counted with... We! All right, sir. Here's the hammer. Please, get in first. It's been swept.
Thanks.
I must say, I remember when I met Deng.
Who?
No, Deng. It was before your time.
Hey, mine, Governor. I got news for you. Deng was not before my time.
No? Says who?
Hey, all due respect aside, if we're talking about Deng, we've left who way back when?
Well, I don't care who knows it. I feel bad for Wen.
That's what we said.
Christador, your stallion stands in need of company. Like some angel's haloed brow, you reek of purity. I see your armor-plated breast.
Celebrities are making a new scene, a crime scene.
And the man who bought good publicity on eBay.
It's Inside Extra Access tonight for the middle of April 2006. Hi, everybody. I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo.
Judging by the ratings, we love to watch celebrities dance. We hate to watch them cook. Dancing with the Stars is a hit. Celebrity Cooking Showdown was flatter than yesterday's fajitas. So what's next for the star-stunted reality series? Mega producer Sid Perth, whose last hit was the mid-hot Hollywood meets NASCAR series, Downshifting with the Stars, thinks he sees what's next in his front view mirror.
Got a show in the early stages of production, which is to say the meeting stage. It combines the celebrity reality thing, which is a very careful balance of the famous with what the hell ever happened to her, with the hottest thing in non-reality, which is to say the forensic crime scene thing. You know, look, you sit around, you have a meal, a couple of beers. Before you know it, you've got celebrity crime scene investigators. I mean, what would you rather watch celebrities do? Cook or solve crimes? Bingo.
Each week, four celebrities join four noted crime scene investigators to sift through the clues and solve a mystery. The first team to crack the case wins, and the crimes are as real as a cancellation notice.
In a pilot, Carmen Electric has to get DNA off the remains. Let me tell you something. The look on her face is worth 10 episodes of freaking Fear Factor.
Backstage whispers tell Inside Extra Access tonight that Jerry Bruckheimer, who produces the super successful CSI shows for CBS, will not be participating in this venture.
But you know, if he thinks there's a legal problem with CSI, it's an easy fix. We change the logo to CISC, Celebrity Investigators of Crime Scenes. Carson Daly comes in to redo the wraparounds, and we're ready to rock and roll.
Inside Extra Access tonight has learned that all five broadcast networks are thinking about celebrity crime scene investigators. If so, the hottest spot in Hollywood could soon be the crime lab.
Tabloid connoisseurs have been whispering out loud about the allegation that a writer for the Page Six gossip column tried to get a supermarket billionaire to pay for good publicity. But a similar scheme seems to be working just fine at the gossip magazine Trash. Jason Jeremy is Trash's gossip editor.
We sold X amount of inches of good publicity to this very reclusive shoe repair billionaire. I mean, this guy's so reclusive, he didn't even want his name mentioned. So he really didn't need that much good publicity. It was just a thing for him. So, the way I heard it, somebody in his organization decides they should sell off the excess publicity rights on eBay.
The auction ended last week, and the winning bidder was Seymour Sipsis, an Oakland, California plumbing contractor who in his spare time is a warlock, a male witch.
The business was doing fine, but I was getting a little frustrated with the Wiccans getting all the attention. I mean, you know, warlocks sponsor a boys' club in Walnut Grove, so I thought it was worth it to get some good ink for us.
Hey, a deal's a deal. You know, we'll be doing a photo spread on the warlocks just as soon as I can spring a photographer from the crew's baby beat.
Good publicity for warlocks? Talk about the magic of the Internet.
That's it for now, but Inside Extra Access Tonight comes rolling back tomorrow with our exclusive IEAT poll.
We asked you what Beatles song you want to hear during the new Cirque du Soleil show, and the results may make you want to come together to get help.
Till then, I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo. So long from Culver City.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, let me read the trades for you, will you? You have no choice, really. Well, you do. You have only 400,000 other things to listen to or watch, but cable a la carte, such a bad idea, from Telecommunications Magazine. And I will read it for you. A la carte video programming is, quote, a bad thing, unquote, that would stunt the development of new channels and programming offerings, cable executives said during their annual national show, Bash, in Atlanta. Despite being a big issue with consumers who dislike paying for tiers of channels they never watch and government officials who want to serve their constituents' needs, a la carte programming, the ability to choose and pay for only those programs you want, is, quote, a bad idea not only for the business, but for consumers, unquote. Michael Wilner, president of Insight Communications. It is a bad thing, he added. A la carte isn't a great way to sell networks. It also isn't a great way to sell programming, says Glenn Britt, president of Time Warner Cable. Mark Cuban, president and chairman of HDNet, used the internet as a perfect example of how a la carte content does not work. There are no hits, he said, on the net. Guess he doesn't own Google stock. So there's so much for choice, ladies and gentlemen. And on a similar note, from CNET.com, an invention from Royal Philips Electronics will prevent TV viewers from switching the channel during commercials or fast-forwarding past commercials when watching recorded content on their TiVos. Viewers would be released from the freeze only after paying a fee to the broadcaster. The freeze would be implemented on a program-by-program basis, giving viewers a choice at the start of each one. The patent has been recently published. The apparatus would work inside a set-top box, like you're going to have to watch digital television in the digital wonderland yawning before us. If implemented, the invention would have a significant impact on, please dig these two words, television culture. Those are the kind of odd usages that crop up when I read the trades for you, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Television culture, ladies and gentlemen. There'll be more radio culture next week. This program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Around the world via your computer at two different locations, live and archived at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available at channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio, available as a free download at www.audible.com/leshow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it would be just like getting those levees inspected before the hurricanes come if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. The show playlist available at harryshearer.com. Where you can also find out about the new CD and DVD by the host of this program, Dropping Anchors, and Now You See It, on sale everywhere. Go to harryshearer.com and read more about it. Or not. Or just go finger the merchandise thoughtfully at your local retailer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and comes through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.